Today's sponsor is Audible.com, who has more than 180,000 audiobooks and spoken word audio products.
Get a free audiobook of your choice at audibletrial.com/outnowpodcast.
This week on Out Now with Aaron and Abe, we're talking San Andreas.
The earthquake or the video game?
Who cares?
Wait a minute, I forgot my introduction.
We are now recording, and this is Out Now with Aaron and Abe. I am Aaron, and as always, this is...
Abe, konnichiwa!
Out Now is a film podcast, which is Abe and I discussing new movies weekly. We cover some various movie topics, jump into a mostly spoiler-free review, then jump back into other fun movie topics. This is episode 194. 194.
I thought we were at 199, but I guess I can't add.
Yeah, not even a bit close.
Not very close.
No, not at all. No. This week we are talking about San Andreas, the new disaster film starring Dwayne The Rock Johnson. I feel like anyone that knows our show should already know at least one of our guests, because we do like to keep things pretty straightforward when it comes to movies starring The Rock. But joining us tonight from The Young Folks, he has over 600 recorded saves of his last Word doc. It's Jose Cordova.
Yeah, I'm back.
The enthusiasm is just magnetic.
It's contagious.
And from Cinemaxwell and the Real Topics podcast, currently rethinking his trip to the Hoover Dam, it's Maxwell Hatted.
Salutations.
How are you both doing today?
Splendiferous.
Fantastical. Fantastical.
Glad to have you guys both on here. Of course, obviously, Jose, we have on when The Rock has movies, with very few exceptions. I mean, he didn't manage to make it on the Furious 7 podcast, but here he is now with a Rock movie that's he's barely in Furious 7. Here, he's fighting earthquakes.
Yes, it worked out.
I mean, that's... Abe, are you excited to talk about San Andreas? You've been championing this film, 4 years before it was even announced to be made.
I was just really, really excited that they had Bakersfield really on fire and terrible in this movie, because, you know...
What's crazy is they just filmed scenes of Bakersfield, and then they put it into a movie.
All I'm saying is Fresno's way better.
Yeah. The top three Fresno, Bakersfield, and Riverside list, I'm sure, is really...
It's that rivalry that keeps me going. But...
That classic rivalry.
Right.
I'm sorry all our Bakersfield friends just dropped out of the podcast, but...
Right, I've had enough of this.
Abe, we're getting close to episode 200.
We are, yes. And I was joking about the 199. I know that we're at 194.
Yeah. We should do something.
I know, yeah.
We haven't talked about this at all.
I bring that up because there's a whole lot of stuff that we could be doing about episode 200, you know. There's a lot of stuff that we've been tinkering with, but also there's a lot of fun stuff that we could probably put out there for our listeners.
Yeah, so we'll get back to you guys on what we're going to do for episode 200, but it should probably be something special, or maybe not. Who knows? Abe, I did something on Friday.
You went to the beach and played disc golf.
Okay, two things. You don't play disc golf on the beach. That would make much sense. And no, I didn't go to the beach on Friday.
I'm saying you went to the beach, and you played disc golf.
No.
So,
I had a special guest on to record a bonus episode of the podcast, and I recorded a special episode with my mother because she saw The Babadook.
Ah!
Because she's better than you. And she...
Mom reviews.
Yeah, and so I recorded a very special bonus episode with my mother talking about The Babadook, and we go full spoilers on it. So, Abe, get around to seeing The Babadook.
I will.
And you listeners, feel free to enjoy this bonus episode that should probably be out by the time this podcast is out already. So if you haven't checked it out already, go on iTunes or Audio Boom, and you can find this bonus episode of me and my mother talking about The Babadook. What else? New commentary coming soon. It's almost a new month, which means that we always do new commentaries every month, so... We have a number of things we can talk about given the movies that are coming out very soon. So I have a couple in mind already for what commentary is going to be happening.
But. If the listeners can guess what it is with just that clue, I think we should just make them a friend of the show.
Okay. Let's not go giving away friend of the show passes to everybody here. Anyway. What else? iTunes reviews and ratings, good to get those. Helps out our show.
Thanks in advance.
Helps other people find our show. You can log on to iTunes. You can look up Out Now with Aaron and Abe. You can probably write a little review, maybe add a star rating. It's really easy to do. Helps us out. Makes Abe feel a lot better about himself, right, Abe?
Definitely. I'd feel much more warm and cuddly inside.
Okay. What does it feel like to feel cuddly inside?
You know, it's all, it's like eating fabric softener.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on from that. I don't know what that was, but let's move on from it. And let's get to a little Know Everybody, where each week we ask each other some questions, try to set the tone for the podcast, and better get to
Know Everybody.
Abe, why don't you start this one off?
All right. So for everybody, what is a natural disaster that you actually very much fear?
I grew up in South Florida, and we were faced with many pretty severe hurricanes. And believe me when I tell you, they are scary, especially, you know, when you're a kid and the power's out and the trees are slapping against the window and the wind is making furniture move outside and you're afraid the grass is glass is going to break. It's pretty intense. Hurricanes are the real deal.
Don't want any part of that.
Yeah.
No. I'm glad I left Florida. So, and then, of course, the past couple of years, we've had some bad hurricanes here in New York, so they followed me.
You're the reason.
After you. I know, right? Gosh, I'm so sorry for Sandy, guys. I'm so sorry.
Hurricanes, the revenge.
The revenge. As a Californian, you know, usually we worry about earthquakes. So that's kind of the standard answer. But I was going to say, after watching The Impossible, I would never want to be in a... That was a tsunami, right? That just seems horrible.
Yeah.
And also, I don't know how to swim. So that would be terrible.
That would be pretty bad.
I can't wait for the Out Now episode where we record Jose learning how to swim.
Coming for episode 200. Damn it!
Yeah, we spoiled it away. That one. Spoiled it. Obviously, I'm worried the most about Sharknadoes.
The Sharknadoes are very serious. I mean, they occur very often as well. It's not very pleasant.
They've taken a lot of lives. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
When is Sharknado season?
It's usually in July around Comic-Con.
Oh, okay. All right. So it hit San Diego.
Well, I mean, first it hit L.A. Last year it hit New York. This year it's hitting Washington, D.C., so the pattern's pretty clear.
Okay, yeah.
No need to define what that pattern is. But let me just tell you, it's a
it
pretty clear
It moves south and then jumps east. Okay.
I have a question. This one's a bit of a... This one's actually... It's kind of a cast of this, Abe.
Oh, wow.
Remember Cast This?
Yes, I do. I love that game.
I'm going to basically just name a premise for you, and I want you guys to kind of pick it out. I want you to pick a wrestler and a disaster for this character for this wrestler to fight in a film.
A wrestler and...
Ooh, good question.
A disaster for him to fight?
Yeah.
All right, yeah. So The Undertaker versus a zombie apocalypse.
That's pretty good. That makes so much sense. Yeah.
Thematically, very consistent.
I would have Stardust fight asteroids.
That's pretty good. I think that one's
pretty good.
You guys are so good with your synergy with the names there.
Undertaker fighting the Zone. That's so good. The Undertaker and Mankind.
Like special appearance by Paul Bearer, which, you know, he's passed away, but there'd be a guy who looks exactly like him. That gives him keys to, like, this giant zombie, like, I don't know.
Or they just get zombie Paul Bear.
No, that'd be bad.
Not if he's fighting on the side of good.
Uh-huh. Okay, there you go. All right.
A natural disaster. Mm. There used to be this very... Oh, I want Rikishi in whatever Rikishi. Tropical land he's from. Fighting a tsunami, which I just said about. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. See, I... Try to find some synergy there. I know he's from an island nation. I don't remember exactly which one, but
other answers, of course, include Hulk Hogan versus a hurricane. But that, you know, whatever. All right, good job, guys. Good set of movies here. I'm sure the Asylum's on these right now. That's how you play.
No, everybody.
All right, moving on. Now let's get to Out Now Quickies.
Yeah.
Each week on Out Now, we have one main movie week that we talk about. What we've been watching during the week. That's all. Typical Out Now Quickies.
Yeah.
Abe, have you seen any other movies this week?
I have not seen any other movies.
What do you watch, Abe? What are you doing over there? What have you watched?
A computer screen that shows me how to do business.
Maxwell, have you seen any other movies this week?
I saw the Poltergeist remake, and I wish I hadn't.
Yeah. That.
Mm.
No good thoughts on the Poltergeist remake.
That's about it.
Okay. Jose?
I watched Tomorrowland, which you guys talked about last week, and this movie has just, I think this is the like biggest internal struggle I've had about how I feel about a movie, because watching it and immediately after, I was like, I enjoyed that. You know, I thought that was pretty good. And then I thought about it more and I listened to people talk about it, including your guys' episode, which was great. And then I liked it less, but then I also wanted to stick with my gut reaction. So I've just been kind of going back and forth. I think there's a lot of good stuff in there, and it also has like a lot of really clear issues. So I don't know, I keep going back and forth. That was the last thing I watched.
That's kind of where I'm at too. Yeah. Like I want to say like, yeah, I there's a lot of good stuff in there, but it also has a lot of issues. Like, but you want to like it because you're not you walk into Tomorrowland, you're like, yeah, Brad Bird, he made a sci-fi movie. But then there's every step you take like, yeah, but. The thing with the that encompasses the whole episode from last week, essentially. But...
yeah, pretty much.
Maxwell, I know you like Tomorrowland a little more, I think, right?
I did, yeah. I mean, I do think it has issues, but on the whole, I really enjoyed it. I particularly appreciated its sense of optimism. It's a little heavy-handed, but, you know, as a means of fighting the cynicism of the modern age, I think sometimes you need a heavy hand. I wish the third act was a bit stronger, but on the whole, you know, I did enjoy it.
That's really where I come away with it, too. Yeah, I just wish the third act was stronger. Like, if it wowed me at the end, I'd probably be, like, more positive on it overall. And I am pretty, I feel like I'm more positive than a lot of people on it, but it's just like, yeah. It's also like, because I think Mad Max and that were my two most anticipated movies of the summer, so it's like, one of these delivered, and one of the other's like, yeah, that happened, too. It's just a little bit.
That Mad Max, that happened too. Yeah, I know. You're so disappointed in Mad Max.
Yeah, I was disappointed the third
all
time.
All the critics are disappointed in Mad Max.
When I saw it the third time this weekend, I was really disappointed.
I think Jumio has seen it like 5 times now.
Something like that, yeah.
It's pretty amazing.
It's insane. I will say, as somebody who went to engineering school, there's a lot of stuff that just I really enjoyed about what I think Tomorrowland was trying to do. Whether or not it accomplishes, I think, is where your mileage may vary, but that I feel like it potentially could be really inspiring, especially to kids.
And well, I think it brings up the age-old
question.
That
might be the best audience for it, yeah.
It brings up the age-old question. Would you rather something shoot for the stars and not quite hit it, or just be, like, not try and be okay? I always will favor ambition over not trying, personally.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree that it's nice to have the ambition. It's also nice to, you know, stick the landing a little stronger. I saw Aloha this week. This is the Cameron Crowe film that is, I don't want to say a disaster, but I do feel like we got to see two disaster movies this week, and one of them was Aloha. The film is so obviously, like, tinkered with and, like, pulled apart and put back together again. It's, like, shocking that Sony was like, you know what? Between whatever 3-hour version of Cameron Crowe's original intent of this was versus the 2-hour messy film that we have, that's the one we should choose. I can't even describe what this movie's about in probably less than 5 sentences that, like, make it clear enough. Because, like, I remember I haven't seen, like, the trailer for the movie, but I can't imagine it's any clearer than I don't know what. Like, I don't know what the way it is to advertise this movie, because it's essentially Bradley... I'm even trying to pare it down into words. Bradley Cooper is, at any time during his stay in this Hawaii on this movie, he's like he's an engineer, a hacker, a former soldier, a negotiator, a construction worker of some kind, and a strategist. I don't actually know what his job is, but he's on Hawaii to do something, and this leads him to meeting Emma Stone, who plays like his watchdog. She kind of like follows him around. She's like an Air Force pilot that's been assigned to him, and like his ex-girlfriend played by Rachel McAdams is there, and he's trying to deal with a bunch of stuff, which includes working for a shady billionaire played by Bill Murray. That's a fun sentence to say. And dealing with this general played by Alec Baldwin. Like, there's all this stuff going on, and the movie, like, does no favors by rushing you right into things. Like, the first act is so clunky and sporadic of just, like, giving you bits of information that, like, seem important. And then you get to this middle section where it's like, all right, now the movie's finally found its groove. I don't actually know why certain characters are a certain way, but at least the cast is good enough where you kind of appreciate it. And then it just gets to this end where it's like, all right, there's a lot of threads being wrapped up, and I'm not sure which one I'm supposed to care about, because, boy, it feels like they've just lifted entire chunks from this movie away from it. So, obviously, I loved Aloha and can't wait to see it again.
Do you feel that if there were, like, say, a director's cut, it wouldn't be better, potentially?
That it's such a tricky, as opposed to something like, I don't know, Almost Famous, where it's like, wow, there's more good to go with all this good. This just feels like, I don't know what, like, the solution of this movie is if it's longer, because it's like, it'll just feel longer. I don't know.
Right.
I don't know if the story's all that worthwhile. I will say that the various controversies that have, like, come around this week involving, like, Hawaiians and the kind of whatever kind of insults this movie is supposedly portraying about the Hawaiian people, this movie's very pro-Hawaii. Like, there's a lot of stuff the marketing's, like, leaving out in terms of how much interaction with Hawaiian natives there are in this film, which is a shame, because it feels like, hey, let's give all this power to people that watch the trailers and want to complain about stuff, as opposed to actually, I don't know, correcting people on said things. I will say there's this kind of, what seems like a joke has been taken kind of seriously, where Emma Stone's character, she's a quarter Hawaiian, and, like, I've seen various articles write up the fact that, oh, Emma Stone is replacing Asian Americans in film, and it's like, there's a purpose to why it's happening, but, you know, whatever, do what you want, I don't know. Regardless, the very uncontroversial Aloha's in theaters now, and it's not good. I can only hope that there's a better cut out there for Cameron Crowe to be proud of and eventually be able to share with people, but I'm not sure if more of this movie is what we need.
You know, you mentioned the trailer, and I was gonna say right when you said that from the trailer it seems like there's about three different movies in there.
There's three different Cameron Crowe movies in there, that's for sure. The soundtrack's great, as expected. The movie's set in Hawaii, so it looks great, as expected. But yeah, it's a mess.
It's a shame.
Yeah. Ooh, I did want to mention one other thing that I watched this week.
Too bad, we're moving on.
Have you guys checked out this terribly named Scrotal Recall show on Netflix?
I've seen it on Netflix. I have not seen the show. I've just seen this thing pops up and I'm like, you would also like Scrotal Recall. And I'm like, why would I also like Scrotal Recall, Netflix?
Yeah, it seems like a terrible, like, porn movie parody name. But it's actually
where Arnold Schwarzenegger shrinks down and has to go get his ass to a scrotum really quick.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. But the show is actually kind of like it's a sort of rom-com TV show, you know. And what it reminds me in a way of is almost like a British take on something like How I Met Your Mother, where you have a character who kind of goes back and recalls all these different relationships that he's had, all the meanwhile he's trying to pursue one particular another character. So it does some interesting stuff with kind of jumping back and forth in time. And the performances are all pretty good. And it's really short. It's, you know, typical British fashion. It's 6 episodes, I think. But it's a fun little show, especially if you enjoyed anything like How I Met Your Mother or stuff like that. There's been a lot of shows, I think, tried to fill that void last year with stuff like Selfie, A to Z. That one where they, like, their inner monologue. It was out loud that I don't
Manhattan
remember.
Manhattan Love Story.
Yes, yeah. Thank you.
That's a
that
show.
One. Yeah, but this is kind of fun, and it also reminds me of older British shows that I like Coupling. If you guys ever watched that.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's fun, and they're all like, you know, half hour episodes, 6 of them. You can get through it in like, you know, a couple days. It's a lot better than the title.
Is it like single cam, like not a laugh track and all that nonsense?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Yes.
All right. Interesting. Okay, so that's Scrotal Recall, and that's on Netflix now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right, that was on our quickies.
Yep.
All right, let's move on now. Let's get to our trailer talk where we discuss some of the newest movie trailers, what we thought of them, when they're coming out, and what have you. And we got a couple doozies this week, guys. First up, we have the trailer for Point Break. This is the remake of Point Break, starring Luke Bracey, a name we're all familiar with, so why go over even who he is, and Edgar Ramirez?
Edgar Ramirez.
I don't even know where to be begin with this one. Basically, Edgar Ramirez is the Bodhi character, of course made famous by Patrick Swayze, who is now an extreme sports enthusiast slash, like, freedom fighter, I guess is the way to go.
Seems like it.
He goes around the world with his buddies committing heinous acts of liberation to, in order to make the people aware of what really needs to be happening by spreading the wealth and what have you via extreme sports heist missions. And of course, Luke Brasey, channeling Keanu Reeves as Johnny Utah, is the man who goes undercover to stop him. This is a movie that's been directed by one of the second unit directors on the original Fast and the Furious, which itself was a ripoff of Point Break, so there you go. With all that said, Jose, what are your thoughts on the trailer for this Point Break remake?
Is that what I thought it was a GoPro commercial. That's really the only thing missing is the GoPro logo. But it's such a strange... somebody posted, when this news came out, posted, hey, wait, what's... This Point Break trailer is not so bad. And they posted the old Point Break trailer. And I just haven't seen them both kind of back-to-back. It's so strange to me that they were like, Point Break is the movie we need to give kind of the blockbuster treatment to. We're going to make it bigger and more action and crazier. And also put some new white guy they were trying to make into a thing. I don't know. And the thing is, I like Edgar Ramirez a lot, yeah. Especially with the, you know, dearth of Latino actors. So it's just, I don't know. It seems disappointing. It'll probably be another movie with Edgar Ramirez in it where he's fun and interesting and the movie's not as much. Yeah, not too excited about it.
Maxwell?
I don't really care, to be honest. I have no feelings about the original. Some of the, you know, shots in this are kind of cool, you know, the skydiving and whatnot, but I was like, oh, okay, and that's it. Sorry, I can't be more articulate about this one.
Abe?
I'm calling it right now. It's going to be one of the best movies in December. No, this movie looks really weird, and I believe, like me, these people are extreme athletes. That line itself just made me laugh. I was like, wow, he's talking to a lot of FBI heads, and he's like, I believe, like me, these guys are extreme athletes. It's like, wow, great, great, you know, discovery there, Agent Utah. What's cool about it is they I think Aaron, you wrote about this too. The parallels to this Keanu Reeves channeling is pretty spot on.
I didn't think channeling Keanu Reeves was the way to go for a Point Break remake, but damn it if he didn't go for it anyway.
Yeah, I mean, good on them. So I'm excited, or not excited, but I'm curious to see how it's going to pan out. And I wouldn't be surprised if I did come to think about it in December and be like, hey, it's not a bad movie.
I can say that the stunts look fine. Like, as far, like, if you're going to go this route with a movie like this, at least it has what seemed to be, like, good stunt work. That said, I kind of expect that from any action movie these days, so I don't know how much of a compliment that really is. This movie lacks any sort of personality based on what I see. It just looks like everyone's kind of reading lines, with the exception of Luke Brasey, who's channeling one of the worst Keanu Reeves performances. And I'm a guy that really likes, you know, supporting Keanu Reeves, but I don't go very far trying to support him in Point Break as far as acting goes. It's more of like, that movie's a lot of fun and very well crafted, and it has a very bad Keanu Reeves performance that's so bad that they do a live LA show about how bad it is. I mean, there's little to get me, like, worked up for a Point Break remake, because it's like, why? This is such an old kind of premise. I don't understand what the logic is in doing something like this. I am curious as to how good this movie is where Warner Brothers is like, hey, Christmas time, that's when we release our Point Break movie. Apparently they have some sort of confidence in it. So, like, I can only hope that means yay or something. But, yeah, not too keen on this one. I have nothing against the attempt, but seeing it, you know, in action, it's like, this looks pretty generic, guys. So, yeah. So we'll see. But, yeah, Point Break, as I said, comes out this Christmas. So, you know.
Be prepared.
Exactly.
Yeah, I guess. Prepared.
The next trailer we have is The Last Witch Hunter. And I'm only bringing The Last Witch Hunter up because the main reaction I had to this trailer when I initially saw it was, what the hell is this? Where did this come from?
That's pretty much how I feel. I don't know if we need to talk about it.
Here's the movie that starts. Let me just read this cast. This movie stars Vin Diesel, Rose Leslie from Game of Thrones, Elijah Wood, and Michael Caine. It is about Vin Diesel as the last witch hunter who stands between, I guess, humanity and witches. And I don't know. I don't know what to expect from this, guys. But Maxwell, do you have any more thoughts to share on this one?
I think it's just cool that Vin Diesel is finally doing something else other than Fast and the Furious. It's been a while since he's done something else. But it looks really similar to on the order of like I, Frankenstein or Dracula Untold, like these barrage of really mediocre or worse supernatural action movies that we get every year. So I'm not like optimistic, but hey, Vin Diesel with the beard. Woohoo.
You're kind of right, actually. I haven't realized that Vin Diesel really hasn't done anything besides Fast and Furious, with the exception of Riddick. And, I mean, Guardians, if you want to count Guardians.
Nah.
But, like, every movie's been a... There's no, like, little personal project. There's nothing else. Like, the last time he did something like that was Babylon AD, which is horrible. Which is likely what The Last Witch Hunter is going to be.
Probably.
And before that was, besides his cameo in the Fast and Furious Tokyo Drift, it was Find Me Guilty, which is a good movie.
I don't remember him in that movie Babylon AD at all. That's how much.
Less we remember about Babylon AD, the better, Abe.
When you said that, I was like, "Is that that John Travolta movie about them in space?" And I was like, "I don't know who he's in that." And then I looked up
that name.
The I don't know the one.
Is that Battlefield Earth?
Battlefield Earth. Okay.
Now what we need is Battlefield Earth versus Babylon AD. There's your. That's what Asylum should be.
That's the crossover that we need. In our lifetime.
What do you think, Jose?
Oh, yeah. I had the exact same reaction, which is like, WTF, man. I will say that knowing Vin Diesel and, you know, how much he enjoys, like, he was like a big Dungeons & Dragons guy and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Maybe this is his small personal...
I have to imagine it is. Like, why does this movie exist? Like...
Yeah, I mean, he's really... I will give him that, that, like, you know, whatever he feels passionate about, like, he'll go out of his way to try and get it done.
He'll go for for sure.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, I can't begrudge him that at all. It's the most confusing trailer that I have ever seen. There's Vin Diesel in, like, modern times, but the thumbnail on one of the trailers that I clicked on has him in, like, this crazy beard and, like, a Macklemore haircut, which I was very disappointed not to see in the trailer.
I like to imagine that he like probably plays the past versions of witch hunters, and it's just like they're all him, but just like his grandparents and what have you, his ancestors.
And there's also just like that tree of life from, you know, Norse mythology at one point, or something that looks like that, and British people, and he has a flaming sword, which is cool.
Flaming swords are always cool. We can agree on that. That's just easy.
They are.
You put a sword on fire, it's suddenly it's a cool sword.
But yeah, I don't know. I'll probably watch it just out of, like, you know, curiosity. And I like Vin Diesel. He's like The Rock, but it's not as personable, I guess.
We're not emphasizing the fact that Michael Caine's in this enough, guys. I mean...
Michael Caine.
Michael Caine shows up Michael in this trailer. And it's like, okay. I thought he was just, like, you know, Nolan or nothing, or just staying in England. But, I mean, I guess Michael Caine was like, this last witch hunter script sounds great. Like, I don't know. What do you think?
It was a favor that they had to call in, and he had to do it.
I did get the feeling that this was probably a film directed by, what's his name, from Wanted, Timur Bekmambetov.
He was supposed to direct it.
Exactly. I found that out later. It's like, oh, well, I guess I was on the right track, because this seems like something like so like wild and crazy that he could probably be the one, or like one of those types of directors that kind of does these movies. But no, it's not. It was him, and it isn't anymore. And now it's Breck Eisner, who, of course, brought us Sahara, Matthew McConaughey classic, and the
Sahara is actually kind of fun, actually.
And The Crazies, which is also kind of fun. So
yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
There's talent there. I mean, there's a lot of good things going into this. I just have no idea what the hell it is. Like, it's not based on anything. It's just like someone just wrote a script called The Last Witch Hunter, and Vin Diesel's in it.
And what's weird
original
is,
films, you know?
Yeah, what's weird is it's a movie that you would think would just come out on DVD. And when I saw the trailer too, I was thinking, like, man, what? They would release this nationwide? But again, Jose, you brought up a good point. I didn't think about which is maybe this is just Vin Diesel saying, I really, really want to do this because I'm a huge nerd.
It seems like this could be a video game that has these voices in it.
Like the Witch. Oh, wait, what's that new one that just came out for Xbox?
Or The Witcher 3.
Witcher 3.
Yeah, Vin Diesel.
Yeah. Which is a really fun game.
Yeah.
Or it seems like it would be like based on a book series that I didn't know, but like sold a thousand copies like in the '80s or something, and I just never heard of it.
That's what I thought it was. That's why I was frantically looking this thing up. I was like, what the hell is this? And it's like, no, it's just a movie that exists, apparently. Vin Diesel secretly filmed The Last Witch
Hunter. Really wants to do it.
Yeah. All right. That's The Last Witch Hunter. That movie comes out October 23rd.
Just in time for Halloween.
Exactly. Hunt some witches with Diesel. Perfect. This Halloween. You can all wear your Vin Diesel costumes and everything. It'll be great. All
right, you get to be Groot.
I'm not shaving my head.
You can't be Groot because we are Groot.
Oh.
Anyway, moving on. Let's get to our main film review now for San Andreas.
This whole chunk of land will be decimated.
Are you saying the whole San Andreas fault might go off?
Everybody down!
Yes, that's exactly what I'm saying. We can't stop it. We can't prepare for it. It will be a global event.
That should have been the trailer for San Andreas. Earthquakes may have met their match in San Andreas, the new disaster film which finds the earth shaking and The Rock put up to the challenge of accomplishing his goal. The Rock stars as Ray Gaines, a helicopter rescue pilot who ditches his duties once massive earthquakes start hitting California in an effort to save his daughter, played by Alexandra Daddario. Sure, somewhere in there I said the name right. The film may not actually be based on the Grand Theft Auto video game, but we do see The Rock steal various vehicles in order to reach San Francisco with his ex-wife, played by Carla Gugino. Will he get through this mess? Maxwell Hadid, I know you and Jose have recently done a podcast encapsulating The Rock's filmography. Am I correct?
We did.
And so, yeah. So with that, I want to ask you, what are your thoughts on The Rock when it comes to these standalone pictures that he gets a chance to be a part of? And what did you think of this film?
To answer your first question, I wish he was in better movies. I mean, he is an insanely charismatic performer. And a lot of the standalone movies that he does are just kind of mediocre. Like, he's usually the best thing in these movies, which is the case here, I would say, in San Andreas. You know, he's charismatic, he's tough, he brings some good emotional content to it. You believe his relationship with his daughter and that he is committing these crimes, as you alluded to earlier, with passion to save his daughter. But this is just an disaster movie that's kind of, I said on Twitter yesterday, has a very paint-by-numbers feel to it. You know, the director kind of took the Roland Emmerich playbook and was like, all right, we got this, and we got this, and we got that, and we'll do it. And not to discredit the pretty good work that the tech crew does, I mean, the effects are relatively impressive, and there are some kind of intense moments, especially earlier on in the movie when we're seeing all this destruction occur. But I was not particularly impressed by the film as a whole.
Jose?
Yeah, I love The Rock. I'm sure
you do?
On the show and listens to the show knows that at this point. For every reason that Maxwell said, he used to, his tagline when he was in the WWF was the most electrifying man in sports entertainment, and I think that's just changed to the entertainment in general now.
One of my favorite Rock cameos early on in his career was when he was on that 70s show and he plays like his father, and he says, "I have a son, and my dream is for him to become the most electrifying man in world entertainment." and Fred Foreman's like, "Yeah, good luck with that." Then he walks away.
Yes, he has this very good skill of knowing exactly what type of project he's in and what he needs to bring to the table. So, like Maxwell said, he's like the best thing about this movie. I probably enjoyed it a little bit more than Maxwell did. I've been having a really good time this last 3 or so weeks, maybe month, with movies kind of making me feel like they're a bit of a throwback to older stuff. You know, Mad Max was that kind of big blockbuster that we used to get that also had something, you know, kind of interesting to say underneath. And Tomorrowland tried to get kind of that Spielberg-esque feel to stuff. And this just reminds me, like, of the Roland Emmerich stuff and the other kind of, like, cheesy, dumb disaster movies we used to get back in the day. So I enjoyed it in that sense that, you know, there's probably, like, half of the lines you can probably say them before the actors say them because you know exactly where the script is going. But, yeah, there's some cool destruction. I think most of the performances are pretty good. I actually really enjoyed some of the side characters that I didn't know were in this movie, like the two British brothers. Carla Gugino's fun. And The Rock he's awesome. Yeah, I don't think it's going to set the world on fire or anything like that, but it's a decent time at the movies.
It set San Francisco on fire,
yeah,
that's
for sure.
Abe, what are your thoughts on San Andreas?
So for San Andreas as a disaster movie, it's actually pretty good. As a movie, it's not terrible. It's not bad, but it's not very good either. And I say that because contained in the world itself, I like how they essentially just focus on the giant earthquakes being the main culprit of the film. They incorporated a lot of other characters that makes sense, which is the scientist over at Caltech, and they keep him throughout the film, and he sends out various warnings. I like how the film is basically contained when The Rock is just looking for his family. Sure, we can talk about the egregious things that he does later, but I did like that aspect of, like, hey, look, instead of, like, spanning and spawning other little pockets of side characters here and there, this is just a story about a guy trying to save or trying to get to his family. And then what I liked about it too is that The Rock's performance is pretty serious in this movie. He doesn't really make many jokes. He doesn't really give you like a sly smile here and there,
which I think is a detriment to the movie, but we'll get to that.
I think that it kind of adds to that tone of like, okay, well, we want to make a serious movie, which I think does take away from some of the fun. And I'd say that the geography in which Alexandra Daddario is in San Francisco is just completely off because she probably didn't have to walk that far to get to Coit Tower, nor Nob Hill from where she was in Chinatown. So that was weird. But on the whole, I like the way that they filmed some of the scenes there with the destruction in the roads and the looting in Bakersfield.
And it was just Bakersfield.
Yeah, but it kind of touches upon these things, and I know that it doesn't really want to hit all of them really hard. Like, for example, like the scene in World War Z where things are going crazy and Brad Pitt has to go get some stuff at a grocery store, and there's massive looting, right? So they're kind of just getting in on these things of things would go crazy in these types of situations.
That's I want to go into that right there, because that's part of an issue I have. Well, not even it, but more of like, so we watch a movie like this, and you're going to get obviously what you're going to get. You're going to get The Rock fighting earthquakes. That's, you know, that's a great like sentence to say right there in terms of here's a summer blockbuster. The Rock fights earthquakes. Good. Okay.
Right.
A lot of these movies that we get, they at least try to do something. Like you want, like even if it's like subtle or it's, you know, just a, you know, just a kind of a look at kind of society from various perspectives based on the times or whatever. You have things like Day After Tomorrow, which handles the kind of the environmental, you know.
Sure.
Policies and what have you, or War of the Worlds, which is there's a lot of political commentary involving the Iraq War, what have you. This movie has nothing. I mean, there's nothing here. And and if there's nothing here with that, and you have like no characters beyond like Rock, Daddario, Gugino, like there's nothing there beyond like their own like personalities that they're in, what they're bringing to the film. There's really not much to go on. I say all this, but I still had like a goofy amount of joy with it. I wouldn't say it's because the movie has a goofy amount of joy in it. It didn't fulfill my wish that the movie is far more fun than the trailer makes it seem, where you have Sia's depressing California Dreamin' playing. Yeah. It's not that movie. It's not an Emmerich movie. Emmerich movies, regardless of your thoughts on 2012 or The Day After Tomorrow or Independence Day, or we don't have to talk about Godzilla, but they at least they have fun with what they're doing. They're able to present this kind of melodrama that makes sense for these kind of Irwin Allen disaster movies that hark back to, you know, those 70s ones with like Towering Inferno and what have you. This one, it doesn't have humor in it. It takes itself so seriously. And that's part of my problem with The Rock. My other problem with The Rock is that he's a horrible human being in this movie. But that, you know, regardless of that, he's so many movies. There's only so many movies that seem to know what works well with The Rock, where he can be over the top or it can be fun or what have you. I understand this is a movie about him trying to save his daughter, so it's not requiring him to make one-liners and joke all the time. But when right. you have The Rock in a movie, you got to make a script that uses The Rock well. And this is a movie.
But I think that this is a movie that makes him dramatically act. Is it the right vehicle for him is it the right vehicle for him to be a dramatic actor? Maybe not, but I did like the way that he's portraying this character, who is, you know, he's a hero to some degree, but he's also very focused, and he's a man on a mission kind of thing.
He's a hero in like the first 10 minutes in an action scene I really like,
which is a really terrible scene.
I like that scene a lot. What I like,
A PSA for like not texting while driving.
No, it isn't. That's what I mean. It yes, you're not. You shouldn't text while driving. But the movie plays with you. It has fun.
Yeah, I know. It plays with you two times.
At first, you think in the opening scene, there's a girl that falls off a cliff essentially driving. And at one point, there's a car, like, and we literally, like, I was me and some of the people in the screening, we were like, oh, some Peter Paris, friend of the show, and Jeff Cannata, friend of the show. We were like sitting together and we're watching this opening scene with this girl. She like turns her head as a car's driving, and like you think, oh no, she's gonna ram off the cliff, and she doesn't. Like nothing happens, and then she gets a text on her phone. She looks down at her phone, like, oh no, she's gonna drive off the cliff because of the text. Oh no, she doesn't. It doesn't happen. And then Rock just randomly falls on her car.
Yeah,
it's like
surprise, we got you.
It's like this weird like Final Destination esque type of sense of humor that I really enjoyed, and I'm thinking, okay, the movie's gonna have fun like that, and it doesn't. That's the last time you ever get that
that's
kind
actually,
of fun.
That's what I thought too. I thought, oh, so this is the kind of movie that we're going to be in for, and then it actually doesn't
do that.
Right.
But that scene's still really, it's fun, and then the sequence involving rescuing her is a lot of fun in terms of like the kind of suspense, because you get the stakes there, you understand.
So
it.
Yeah, my last
and
general,
the crazy thing about that is that's the first scene where you have The Rock with his team, who he refers to as the family. Then where do they go? They're nowhere.
Gotta go do
that.
Their jobs.
You never see them again.
Yeah.
Hooked up. Out the door. Race clear. Natalie, don't you worry. I'm gonna get you out of here. This thing isn't gonna hold.
Hey, we are in the red. We are going to crash.
Natalie, we are going now.
My last general thought is just that The Rock is a man who would have done great in like 80s, 90s action movies. Just Commando, redo Commando with The Rock, and I'd be down.
Abe, I've seen that four times. Three times. It's the Fast and Furious movies where he's playing over the top. Like that's exactly what
he's got to go save his daughter from a group of mercenaries 40-1 and kill all of them. He's got to do that.
But so, I get what you're saying in terms of like The Rock showing off his dramatic skills. That's fine, but like it's hard to mess that up when it's like I gotta save my daughter. Like you have to get a really bad actor to not be able to show you like someone being compelled to want to rescue their daughter. If you get The Rock on screen, I want to see him smile. I want to see him have some fun. No, seeing massive deaths because of earthquakes doesn't make it inherently fun, but that you just gotta write that movie differently. And this movie didn't try that. It's just like, all right, we'll just shove The Rock in here and repress all the skills that make him very charismatic, and just hope his natural charisma makes it work. It does, because The Rock is naturally charismatic. That's good for him. It's like, you have to really pare down the fact that he's a man who's credited with saving 600 people in rescue missions or whatever, and yet he takes every opportunity to ditch every single opportunity he has to save anyone.
He's a man on a mission, I'm telling you.
With the exception of one time, because he just happens to be around people. Like,
yeah, I mean, like, yes, those old people were there, and they gave him something, so he's like, all right, yeah, well, I'll scratch your back, too.
With all of that said, I kind of like this movie.
That's what I'm saying.
It's not the best of disaster movies, but it's not the worst. And I've seen the worst. This is not Volcano with Tommy Lee Jones and Anne Heche's love interests. This is
I say it's Dante's Peak.
If compared to Volcano, it's Dante's Peak. Sure, that's fair. No grandmas jumping into acid lakes, but you know, not every movie can add everything. It's Know the Core, that's for sure. A movie, once again, we should be doing a commentary for at some point. Because Core,
I haven't thought of that movie in a decade.
The Core is amazing, but
no.
this movie, oh boy. I mean, this is the kind of movie where I wish it's already been a year and we can do a commentary track for it, because there's so much like goofiness and fun from like a audience laughing at it level, not an audience laughing with it.
There
level,
was a lot of laughter in the theater.
A commentary track on the Asylum version.
Yeah,
San Andreas Quake, it's called.
San Andreas Quake.
Out now, yeah.
That's my favorite alternative wrestler, San Andreas Quake. But did we talk about Paul Giamatti at all so far?
Jose brought him up, I think.
I mean, I mentioned him. It's interesting because he's just there to kind of like scare people. I mean, I don't know. It's also weird. Like you're saying, you know, usually movies have something that they're trying to say. And I was like, is this about how we should take earthquake safety more seriously, or
no.
We should try to predict earthquakes? But it's such a small string.
The mayor of Los Angeles did say, I hope people who see this now take earthquake safety more seriously.
It's also a very subtle message about funding Caltech. That's what it's really about.
The director just jumped from 6.5 to 8.5.
What does that mean?
Powers of 10. So it's 100 times stronger now. Don't worry. Caltech is probably the safest place to be right now.
It's a Caltech commercial.
Yeah,
I love when he's like, can we do this? Of course. We're at Caltech.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, facepalm.
Opportunity not casting Sung Kang, by the way, as his assistant. I feel if I'm not getting him in Furious 7, then I should be able to get my Sung Kang fix somewhere. And he's not in this movie.
He should be in more movies.
I am getting BD Wong in Jurassic World, so I mean, my Asian American actor.
Yeah. How about when Sung Kang like throws a child?
The guy.
It's like
we'll get to this later, but I have a question in the feedback about kind of disaster movie hero sacrifices that I think there's a lot of those, and not nearly enough people answered that question in the feedback, but we'll get to that. Paul Giamatti, like, if you look up thankless in the dictionary, it's his role in this movie, right?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, he exudes so much good because he's Paul Giamatti, and it's ridiculous how well grounded his character is, what like interesting stuff he kind of gets to do to an extent because he's Paul Giamatti, it makes it work. But like that monologue he has where he explains why everyone needs to be in fear over like the when he like they hack into the news broadcasting, and he gets this one moment where he says like, we all have to prepare, and then he like pauses and he like his like lip starts quivering, and then he starts, it's just like we were like rolling in the theater. It's just so damn funny.
We need to hear more Paul Giamatti, Aaron.
He's going for it, and it's great.
The world is gonna snap in half. Like, it's just...
Basically, California's entire tectonic plate has shifted. People need to know that the shaking is not over, and it's not aftershocks I'm talking about. San Francisco will get hit again, and it's going to be a bigger monster this time. Our models are predicting a 9.5 or greater. It will be so big that even though it's happening here in California, you will feel it on the East Coast.
There are moments of fun like that where you're like, okay, it's funny how serious things are, and there are little things that, and there's also other, like, the Rock has a great joke about second base, and I'm like, that's what this movie could have been. There could have been.
It doesn't have nearly enough of that. This, like, and it provides them ample opportunities given all the crazy stuff they do. I mean, this is almost the Point Break remake in terms of the extreme sporting events that The Rock and Carlo Gugino engage in. It's crazy. I talked about how The Rock is a horrible person, but again, The Rock is a horrible person in this movie, guys. So the movie, the beginning of the movie has the Hoover Dam, like, just being destroyed, right? Like, we lose the Hoover Dam, guys. It's terrible. And obviously,
and they just got done rebuilding it after the Transformers wrecked it.
Exactly, yeah. and I assume Man of Steel, he probably wrecked it too, on like his day off from killing everybody else in Metropolis. He probably went over the Hoover Dam just to blow it up. But regardless, the next day, in an event where everyone should be talking about this, but no one seems to be, they're just like, oh, did you hear about the news? Yeah, that's crazy, right? Like, that's the extent of, like, the Hoover Dam talk that we get. The Rock, like, he has to, like, get in his helicopter and go rescue what I presume is, like, thousands of lives. And the second earthquakes hit, I get it, It's his daughter. He's the Rock. He's got to go save his daughter. But he, like, there's like no attempt to justify what he's doing in this movie, which involves him racing from vehicle to to rescue vehicle to other vehicles, stealing them in order to, like, pass up everybody on the road and, you know, perhaps saving anybody just so he could save his daughter, who was more or less fine before The Rock told her to go one direction. Like, she's like, oh, God, this movie.
She's a survivalist.
I'll say this, and I'm sorry I'm talking a lot, and, like, even though I like this movie and seem to be, like, shouting it down because it's so stupid, even though I still like it. But I did like the Alexandra Daddario stuff. I think her character was really well handled with her in the brothers that she was hanging
with. You know who I didn't like? The brothers.
You didn't like the brothers?
No. Yeah.
Why?
They were a little bit not as practical as I would have liked. I liked his survival instinct of, like, hey, like, you know, I've got my brother, I've got to go. I think I should go with these folks to go to, like, this I don't know, service center.
I like that there's, like, thousands of pieces of glass in this movie, and they miss everybody except one time.
Yeah, I thought about that too. I was like, yeah, Jose's an engineer. He'd be like, yeah, you know, you should probably run away from buildings made of glass.
But I liked her side of the story. Like, I was compelled every time by her.
Yeah.
And what's neat is that, you know, in a world where we have Tomorrowland, Mad Max, Pitch Perfect, these movies about, you know, female leads or what have you, you have this movie where she's pretty proactive and, you know, being the one that's responsible for saving the, like, doing stuff that's, you know, helpful in ways. Like, she knows that landlines on phones work during an earthquake when the electricity's out. She knows, like, how to raid a fire truck and, you know, not share that with anybody. Just like,
I know.
Like father, like daughter in that scenario. But at least she knows how to get
someone. I was like, wait a minute. The firefighters are still right there.
Yeah, no, they pull out, right? There's, like, a wide shot afterwards, and everybody's just walking by them, like, not paying attention to the fact that this girl just stole all the, like, supplies. And the cops are just telling everybody to go one way, and they just happen to walk entirely in the opposite direction. Nobody says anything at all.
But she, like, she handles herself well in terms of, like, an earthquake happening and how to prepare yourself. And I even like the brothers who are, like, the one's an engineer, and there's that scene in the parking structure where he's like, how do I get, like, the kind of the MacGyver thinking of how to get a person out of a situation. I enjoy, like, again, I just, I enjoyed this stuff more, mainly because, you know, it involved a random person and not a person that's supposed to be saving lives, not doing his job. So it's like, there's less things to kind of lament. Yeah. In going into those scenes, but, like, I can agree they're not the most compelling characters, those brothers, but I did like them. I like, they're just likable regular folk.
I just like how they surrounded her with people that, not as though they were dumber than she was, but,
well, you say people, one's, you know, like 12 or so, like, he's a little kid.
One's like 14, the other one's like, you know, he's an architect gonna go get a job at the Bank of America building.
They're regular guys. Yeah. Like, they're two English, but they're from England. They don't have earthquakes there. They don't know what's going on.
Yeah,
isn't the little brother Rickon from Game of Thrones?
From Game of Thrones. Yes.
Oh yeah, I'm like, that guy looks like a shaggy dog. His hair is kind of shaggy. So
that's funny.
But yeah, no, I'm glad that you found this to be enjoyable, Aaron. Maybe not crazy enjoyable, but yeah,
it was enjoyable in a, like.
In a way that they didn't intend, I think.
Yes, it's not enjoyable in the, like, look how fun this movie is kind of way.
Yes, I agree with you.
But it is fun in a... that's not even a recommendation. That's more of, like, if your mind subjectively tells you to laugh at these things, that you might enjoy it. So it's hard to say that that's the way to, like, watch this. Or, like, that's
just makes you wish they had gone all in with this, you know, silliness.
It makes you wish they went full Emmerich. And they don't. it's produced by the Emmerichs, but it's not, like, it doesn't go full Emmerich. So it doesn't have, like... It's the kind of movie where, like, an ensemble cast would work, but this movie isn't that. It's a movie that has basically three stars, and you say, and two of them are together the whole time, and it's, you know, The Rock and Carlo Gugino. The other is Alexander Daddario. It's as opposed to being, like, an ensemble film that has, like, people from all over the place,
right? Yeah.
Doing all kinds of things, and you cut back and forth between them, like, you know, kind of the best disaster movies do, or at least the more successful ones that I can think of offhand that don't involve, like, man on a mission kind of things. So, like, things like Independence Day. Or 2012, where they're, like, all over, they're everywhere, and they have these, you know, things happening, and you can kind of enjoy it because you're seeing all different perspectives. Here, you're just seeing one kind of very linear plot happening, and Mr. Fantastic being a dick. But I mean, that's a whole other side.
Which I thought was, like, over the top. Yeah, I was like, I don't even know why you have to keep doing this and referencing that he's not a good guy, because
you have to lead to that scene where he gets his comeuppance.
I guess. Yeah.
You
also have to, you know, even more so want The Rock and Carla to get back together.
Yeah.
The second he got his divorce papers, this is a movie, by the way, where The Rock gets divorce papers in the mail. I was like, well, that's he's gonna rip those up eventually. Don't worry about that, Rock. You'll be fine. We haven't talked about the kind of spectacle aspect of this film, I guess. And this is maybe that, you know, heavy emphasis on the spectacle. I would say, and I know this movie is $100 million, and this statement might roll your eyes, but that's not very expensive for these kind of movies. So with that being said, it looks its budget. Like, the money's there. I can't fault it too much for not looking how much it cost. Like, it looks like, hey, there's a lot of wanton destruction compared to the $190 million it was spent on Tomorrowland, apparently, which I don't know where that money went, but I mean, this movie looks its budget, right?
Yeah, and I like the disaster aspect of it. They show clearly that it's, you know, Hoover, it starts in the Hoover Dam for whatever reason, secret tectonic plate, and it just rips through Los Angeles, buildings collapse, because it's a 9.5 earthquake in Los Angeles, and then it just keeps riveting up through the San Andreas Fault all the way through San Francisco, who also gets like another 9.6 later in the movie. Things just get destroyed. People get killed in massive ways, like either through fire, through buildings collapsing, through this giant tsunami that happens in
the
Bay
Area.
No bodies,
though, because this is PG-13.
Yeah, exactly. which I was thinking, like, I guess you could go with a Noah route, but I guess you don't want to either. But, yeah, the spectacle is there on the screen. I like that. It's a prominent part.
Maxwell?
For me, visually, the most interesting thing was how San Francisco turns into Venice at the end.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty cool, actually, and I hadn't seen stuff like that, but it was an interesting take on it with all the stuff floating, and somehow the boat's motor still works.
The amount of stuff we're able to kind of ship through. I would agree that I like that kind of that set piece in terms of, like, seeing people boating through the ruins of a flooded San Francisco. I thought that was neat. It also made me wonder, how do you clean this up? That's going to suck. Like, there's a giant cruise liner lying against a building. It's like...
Well, that's why San Francisco, you just got to turn it into Venice, make canals and get gondolas, and then now you have another city on the water.
It's fitting that the last line of the movie is, we rebuild, because I want to see that sequel. I want to see the sequel where, like, they, like, I don't know, get Godzilla to come out and say, like, hey, can you lift this cruise liner off this building?
He's like, sure, no problem.
Like, because we're just kind of standing around shrugging our shoulders here. Like, I don't know how to do this one, guys.
I thought about that, too.
All you need is a fulcrum and a long enough stick.
Yeah,
there you go.
You can move that.
Engineering.
Taker Jose, he graduated in engineering.
The thing about the spectacle in this movie is I felt so removed from it. There was no, like, sense of awe for me.
True.
Some of the stuff in the beginning where it was a little more contained was more exciting, but then when it was, like, these huge wide shots of, like, the city, like, lifting up and bubbling and buildings falling, I felt no connection whatsoever. It was like... Just like watching.
My favorite part of all that stuff, because I think I pretty much agree with you, is the wave, and I really enjoyed that sequence of them trying to. He watches the water.
I think it's character focused. I think. I mean, it's silly as it is, and we can. I don't need to hark on, like, what earthquakes do, because that's not the movie I wanted to see. I didn't need to see the This Is What Earthquakes Do movie. I wanted to see This Is What, you know, Fun Can Come From Seeing This Kind of Movie, which, you can go either way on how much fun you had with it. But a scene like that, Jose, where you have a giant wave, you have two characters that are trying to get over it, and so you can relate to it because you see the stakes there, whereas a giant CG fest of, like, here's building after building, getting destroyed, and here's various people getting squashed by things or what have you, there's nothing there beyond, hey, you paid to see people die. I guess you should enjoy that. So if you can enjoy that, good for you. But if you can't, it's pretty clear why. You have no personal investment in anything going on besides seeing CG destruction. And I don't want to have every summer movie that we see this summer begin with the sentence, in a post-Mad Max world. But at the same time, in a post-Mad Max world, there's a lot of CG here versus the insaneness of seeing practical things happening.
I wouldn't even mind all the CG and all the spectacle if, like, each set piece connected us to someone. Roland Emmerich's made some bad, bad movies, but whenever he cuts in for a huge set piece of destruction, there are people there that have been introduced earlier in the movie that he's at least trying to connect you to.
For sure. Completely agree. And that's, again, why I think the Dario stuff, I think that works well. Because they thrust her into the middle of a lot of these situations.
I could look at her crazy witch eyes doing anything.
Exactly. Yeah. And and there's that like long one-er with Carla Gugino. By the way, we're getting a lot of long one-ers in these summer movies, guys. But there's that long one with Carla Gugino, who's like running through a building as it's like destroying around her.
Yeah,
which was great. Like, I mean, it's this. I mean, it's like a. That's the problem. I'm like, this is like a ride. I'm like, I'm enjoying this because it's like I'm at I don't know Universal or something, and I'm going through
a ride. 4D.
Yeah, 4D. Speaking of that, I wish New York, and I'm surprised it doesn't at this point, have a 4DX cinema. I feel like they need to open one here, because if there is ever a movie like designed for that experience with like the seat shaking and water being splashed at you and the smell of smoke, it's something like this.
And yeah, they do have them in Hollywood.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is a movie that feels like it's been designed to work in that kind of way.
Right.
And I'd imagine that's impressive. Not that like movies. You can't, you know, credit the film for being better because it, you know, it has this extra sensory level of experience.
I sure don't want to see like Far From the Madding Crowd in 4D. But...
I would, but could you imagine smelling the sheep and the grain in that movie?
Or like if you're on a horse, like your seat's like trotting along,
and you're feeling wind blowing at you as you're riding with Carey Mulligan
through the
British Air. So basically, what we're saying is, don't see San Andreas. See Far From Madding Crowd in 4D.
In 4D. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, yeah, the spectacle, like, it's there. Yes, there's not too much personal investment because, hey, that's not the movie we're seeing. Apparently, we're just seeing lots of CG silliness. But it's as opposed to other movies, like you said, Maxwell, you brought it up a good point. I mean, Emmerich, for as good as you want those movies to be, he at least tries to connect you with it. If they're melodramatic as hell, because that's the nature of disaster movies in general. That's
hey, man, when the president's wife died, I was pretty sad.
Don't get me started on Independence Day, because I could talk about how much that's a great movie all day.
It is a good movie.
But let alone 2012. By the way, this movie, compared to 2012, limo drivers need to take a cue from John Cusack, because the limo driver in this movie was terrible. he was not a good
It wasn't
limo.
His fault. The garage dropped out from underneath him.
Abe, that's not an excuse. Do you remember 2012? Do you know what John Cusack
was? It was a flying limousine.
He did everything he could, and he was successful because he's a damn good limo driver. Can't say the same about The Rock as helicopter piloting goes, though. Couldn't say the helicopter to save his life. But,
other than the opening scene, which was again really awesome.
Yeah, that didn't involve earthquakes. Or was it just a random canyon, or was that the result of an earthquake? By the way,
I think it was just a random canyon. Beware of falling rocks.
Yeah.
I just like how like at the end of that rescue scene, you just get the whole entire regular yeah from all of his teammates, like we did it. And I was like, oh, yeah, they're going to be this kind of movie. Kind of like quickly establishing who the Rock character is and who his buddies are. Kind of just like in Taken when he's having a steak dinner.
Yeah, when he's having the CIA barbecue with his old CIA buddies.
Yeah.
But yeah, this movie, it just gives up on those characters. Like, that's a good way to lead to the ensemble thing where you like.
But I get why I did it, and I was okay with it.
You get why I did what?
Why I just left those characters, because it was The Rock trying to save his ex-wife and trying to save his daughter.
I get the forward narrative of it, but at the same time, you establish The Rock has what he calls a family. He literally calls his team a family. So you think, well, this is a movie that has family. And then you never see that family again. Like, it just gives up on it. Like, it doesn't even know what it wants to be.
It's got his real family in the movie. That's why.
The sequel should be like Rosencrantz and Guildenstern style.
So where you see what they're
it's
doing.
It's the same destruction over again, but follows Colton Haynes' character and the other guys. You even see the reporter from that scene again, yeah, but not his quote, family.
She's
somehow like, she ends up at
she's
Caltech.
Like the only reporter in LA.
She's like fourth build, yeah, so she better be the most important.
Well, it's funny because they're introduced, those his team members are introduced so prominently,
yeah.
And you even get that little shot of her writing down, like, basically the character description for the guy. And where she's
exactly.
Like, you know, cute but dumb or
yeah,
whatever, and it's
but
like,
not
okay,
not smart,
telling
but
these guys.
Right.
Like, it seems like, because this movie's only 2 hours, in a world where disaster movies generally last, like, 2.5 to 3 hours, it's like they deleted, like, the hour that has them in it just so they can have a more concise movie.
Like, I hope his arm is okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sending down the rookie to do the rookie things.
And Abe, you didn't
can we also talk about Kylie Minogue? Like,
all,
why
all
is she in this movie?
All 2 minutes of her?
Kylie Minogue is in this movie?
Yeah, she's
the sister.
She's the sister of Mr. Fantastic, who's, like, asking...
That was Kylie Minogue. Oh.
Yeah, asking Carla Gugino all these questions.
She got her comeuppance.
Let's hire two British actors and have them play Americans.
Yeah.
And you could just have them play Brits. That bothers me a lot.
I like that, by the way, I like that Mr. Fantastic's name was Riddick. That made me laugh a few times.
Yeah.
And there's a building called Riddick. Riddick.
It's the Bank of America building in San Francisco.
It's like, what? Is the Rock, like, chiding Vin Diesel for some reason?
I hate Riddick.
Riddick.
It's so random.
Oh,
it's,
boy.
There's so many weird choices in this movie.
This conversation was more fun than the movie itself.
One of my favorite scenes was when The Rock has, you know, he's already stolen a truck that was already stolen, so it makes it better. And he's, like, driving along, and he sees, like, two old people on the road, and he just quickly passes them.
Yes! I was like, wait a minute, is this like in Last of Us where they're just pretending to be changing their tire, but this is actually going to be some sort of nefarious, you know, plan from other old people that are just going to steal their truck. But no, he just passes them.
And they're like waving and shouting at him.
Yeah. And I was like, well, that's kind of rude.
That's kind of a dick move. And then not only that, but somehow he couldn't see that there's a giant chasm in front of him. Like he would have kept driving apparently if they didn't like shout at him to stop. It's like
I have that problem in a lot of movies.
It's a giant hole in the road.
He had to approach that so he could say that great line.
What was the great line?
Is the San Andreas fault.
Now, as much as I don't care about the movie's scientific accuracy, I know how earthquakes work. And how earthquakes work is that plates are rubbing up against each other. So if there's a giant, like two pieces of land that are apart from each other, that means there's no earthquakes, right? I mean, that doesn't make any sense anymore.
No, it was real, man.
It seems like the earthquakes stop at that point if there's a giant hole. Like,
the original title for this movie was The Fault in Our Stars, but it was...
That makes a lot of sense, actually. I would go see that movie.
It's a double meaning because The Rock's getting divorced. Do we have anything else to say about San Andreas?
Nope.
No.
There was a fun little thing that they did for the premiere where they invited like a local, for lack of a better term, earthquake scientist.
A seismologist.
That's the word I was looking for. And she like live tweeted the movie. Yeah. And that was pretty interesting. You guys should just go check it out.
I'll put it on the show notes.
Yeah. I'm good.
Yeah.
But. Yeah, this is a movie that came out and it made $56 million this weekend, so that's good for
Pretty
The Rock.
Pretty strong.
I think this is it's in my dark horses. Do you guys have it at all in your
for
the summer camp?
I did not have it at all.
Jose, did you have it anywhere?
Don't think I did.
But you did. You do have Pitch Perfect in there. So
I agonized so hard about putting that in the list on the dark horse.
Well, it has 146 million so far, so not a bad choice to at least have it mentioned somewhere on your list. So.
Yeah, there's always one every summer that wrecks it for everybody, and now we know which one it is this summer.
Damn that bitch, Perfect.
So yeah, that's San Andreas. It's out in theaters now, so be there, be square, or something like that. Guys, what would you say? When should people go and see San Andreas? Abe?
DVD rental.
Jose?
No, take your friends and go to, like, my theater has they call it the Twilight showing. It's, like, the last one before, like, 6 or something like that, and it's, like, half off. So go watch it at that point.
Maxwell?
Yeah.
When it inevitably airs on TNT.
Because
they know drama.
I'd give it a strong Blu-ray rental, I'd say. It's got its moments. That Paul Giamatti, like, I want that to play. I want that to play like an in memoriam almost, like just like Paul Giamatti. Oh my god. I hope he made some money. All right, that's our
I'm
thoughts.
Sure he did.
That's our thoughts on San Andreas. Let's move on now. Let's get to our sponsors for the week. Today's sponsors are Audible.com. Why Audible? Audible content includes more than 180,000 audiobooks and similar programs for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or any kind of MP3 device. Additionally, Audible is offering our listeners a free audiobook of your choice with a free 30-day trial membership. Just go to audibletrial.com/outnowpodcast, choose a book to download for free, and start listening. It's just that easy. Go to audibletrial.com/outnowpodcast, download a book for free. If you like the book, keep it. If you like the service, keep it. If you don't, you can get rid of the service, but you get to keep that book that you downloaded for free. So, be a winner.
Read
or listen, audibletrial.com/outnowpodcast. All right, Abe, let's do this now. It's time to move into Out Now Feedback.
Feedback.
This is where we go over the various questions and answers from our Facebook page, facebook.com/outnowpodcast, where we talk about the questions that we asked and what you guys answered, and you asked us some questions and we answered. So with that said, Abe, why don't you start this one off?
The first question we asked everyone is, what is your favorite disaster movie based around Earth-based events? Justin writes Twister, and does Wild Wild West count? And no. Probably.
No.
It is a disaster.
He just wants to plug in Wild Wild West wherever he goes.
Phil writes Twister, and April writes also Twister.
A lot of Twister love.
The game, not the movie.
Yeah, the hotspot.
Yeah.
Okay. Next up, we have, in a San Andreas-like situation, what actors would you team up to help you survive? Yeah, this one got a lot of people have thoughts on this one. Nippon has Scarlett Johansson and Anna Kendrick. Surely they would help you through an earthquake. Mike has Samuel L. Jackson. Isaac has Liam Neeson, hands down. Thomas has, which actors usually have survival skills? I don't want to be the ones emoting at the disaster. I don't want to be with the ones emoting at the disaster. Jordan has Werner Herzog and David Lynch. Philip has Idris Elba and Jennifer Garner. That's what a combination that
interesting.
Is.
Interesting combo.
Stringer Bell and Elektra. Jason has Will Smith and Margot Robbie, because I guess they're just together always.
Yes,
now.
Yeah.
Maxwell, you have the Toms, Hanks, and Cruz.
Yeah.
Nice.
Manish has, I feel like Emily Blunt would be a great in crisis situation.
Yeah.
David has easy Sir Ian and Patrick. They are both knights, men of considerable intelligence and experience, and would likely be enjoying a pint safely halfway around the world in Alban as California slides into the sea. James has Harrison Ford. He can drive or fly anything we need to get away from, and with the contact from his self-medication, I don't see myself panicking.
I want Terry Crews and Nick Offerman.
Yes. Boom!
So you can both build your way out and strong your way out.
Yes.
Stuff.
There you go.
And see some peck dancing. Because he has the
and
shake.
A lot of old.
He has the shakes that'll make you quake.
He's the cause of the San Andreas earthquakes. Ah. All right. The next one to ask everyone is: what city has been underrepresented in disaster movies? Justin writes Las Vegas and Rancho Cucamonga.
Definitely.
Yes, Rancho Cucamonga. I mean,
Vegas got torn a new one by Godzilla last year. Vegas is not doing well.
This is true. Yeah. David writes Cincinnati. The only two that come to mind are Traffic and the Vomitous remake of Babes in Toyland with Drew Barrymore and Keanu Reeves.
Abe learned a word.
I did, yeah. I was like, Vivid?
Vomitous.
Friend of the show, Maxwell writes, Sheboygan. Mike has, Ohio needs an asteroid slammed into it, or at least a Godzilla rampage. It's a little bit too far inland for Godzilla, I'd say.
Nothing's too far inland for Godzilla.
I guess you'd be there in three strides, you're right. Yeah. Jason writes, am I home away from home? Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Manish writes, Baltimore. I guess you guys have, who do they have there in Baltimore?
It's nope, next nothing, to D.C., really. So I mean, they probably got the blunt of the force, too.
Yeah. Joe Jans writes, Davenport, Iowa. Everyone thinks it's just heavenly there. Brandon writes, Smyrna, Delaware.
Finally.
Taryn writes Atlanta, Georgia, which is true. That is a large city that you don't really see a lot of disaster movies centered around.
The Walking Dead blew up the CDC, so I mean, we got something.
Movies.
Has there ever been a disaster movie in Seattle?
I feel like I've seen the Space Needle get blown down by something.
Me too. Yeah.
But oh, was that what was the movie with the he's doing Fantastic Four now?
Michael B. Jordan.
The director. Don't they
Chronicle?
Don't they end up in Seattle?
Yeah, they're in Seattle.
They're in Seattle, yeah.
They're blowing up stuff there.
Yeah.
It's a disaster.
Okay, there we go. Other than that, Hackensack in New Jersey.
Hackensack, New Jersey. And lastly, Tyler writes Milwaukee, Wisconsin. So, there you go.
Okay, so here's the question that I wish I got more answers to, but we can just do it right now. What favorite disaster movie character self-sacrifices? Tyler has Randy Quaid in Independence Day. Good stuff. Yeah, I get it. Oh, come on, guys. I mean, so...
He's back.
he's up yours.
Yeah.
There's the grandma that gives herself up to
Lake Placid?
Not
Acid Lake,
or Dante's Peak.
Dante's Peak. Yeah, that's my favorite. That's my go-to.
There's of course. I'm surprised no one jumped on Bruce Willis in Armageddon. Like, I mean, that's the everyone. I think
he
everyone
like, let that guy that he didn't like marry his daughter and destroyed an asteroid for humanity.
Like, I don't like Armageddon, but people that seem to like that movie seem to like jump to that scene. Is like, but he made me cry when he jumped. Like, all right, there. As much as I hate Volcano, there is a scene where a man has a person in his arms and he's trying to jump over the lava. So he like throws this person and then he jumps and then he doesn't make it. So he just kind of burns in the lava, which I find to be hilarious. Gene Hackman in the Poseidon Adventure. There's numerous in 2012 of people just sacrificing themselves. There's
a lot.
This is a trope of these movies.
I mean
that grandma scene. Like,
yeah, that one.
Who kills himself in Twister? I'm sure someone does. It's not Cary Elwes. He just gets carried away.
I mean, you could even say Leonardo DiCaprio in Titanic.
Yes, Leonardo DiCaprio. In Titanic.
Oh yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, that like, here, you have this giant plank to yourself, and I'll die.
Hey, that myth was busted, Abe.
I know, I saw that. Like, they could have fit both of them if they just positioned themselves correctly.
No, it's a question of
points.
There's a scene in Day After Tomorrow where a guy cuts the rope and gets himself out of there. Same with Vertical Limit, actually, although it's not a disaster. It was more of like, hey, we're climbing a mountain and that went wrong. But, which is the tagline, I'm sure. They were climbing a mountain and that went wrong.
I know it's not a disaster movie, but Giselle in Fast 6, that
she had to.
Breaks my heart to this day.
Well, too much weight. I don't really know.
That's not how it worked. No. anyway. All right.
Yeah. And now we go into questions that you guys asked us, and we'll answer here. So Tyler writes, I saw Aloha this weekend and read Aaron's review on Ryan Hollywood. I agree with him, and when he said that he feels like a lot of content was left on the cutting room floor, do you think that there is all this content missing from Aloha? And what do you think of our chances of seeing a director's cut? Just thought I'd ask because I usually think of director's cuts belonging to epic action films instead of romantic comedies. Dramedies.
Good question, and thank you for reading my review at ranhollywood.com. The chances of seeing a director's cut of Aloha, I think, are high just because it's not just like speculation that there's been stuff cut from it, but it's just true. There's plenty of stuff that's clearly been cut from the movie, so... Given that Almost Famous has a director's cut, I wouldn't be surprised if Cameron Crowe has something planned for this one as well to hopefully get like whatever vision of his film he wanted out there in some capacity. Of course, that also depends on how much leeway Sony's willing to give in terms of allowing him to make another cut because, you know, that does cost studios money. So it's like, hey, we'll see. And yeah, director's cuts where they usually go, yeah, I mean, Ridley Scott kind of pioneered the term in terms of getting longer cuts of films or different cuts of films with, you know, sci-fi movies and what have you. There are unrated cuts of various comedies and what have you, but yeah, I guess you don't see them too much for romantic comedies. But, you know, we'll see what happens. Jason asks, if you could spend a whole day with The Rock, what would you guys do? It's a great question.
Yeah, I would on a long drive with him and just have this romantic dinner and long walk along the beach.
Okay.
I'd go to Walt Disney World with him.
There you go.
Oh, that's good. Well, we'd have to hit the gym and then have some pancakes. And then after that, I think we're going to putt-putt.
Yeah, I just have a day of activities. We'd go paintballing and laser tag. We'd do something like Maxwell. You said Walt Disney World, where you can get like a picture of him being epic on the ride with you. That'd be fun.
Like on the way down Splash Mountain, he's like
holding you.
Yeah, exactly.
with his arms, with two fingers.
Just give me a giant bear hug.
And yeah, then we'd obviously have pancakes because the man can make a ton of pancakes.
Yeah.
Definitely pancakes.
No disc golf with him?
Oh yeah, I played disc. That for sure. Obviously, God.
Yeah. You'd probably demolish a tree with a or
yeah.
with their posts, right?
Where's the disc? It's right here, stuck in this tree. How's it stuck? It's like stuck in it. It's not like it's not partially out of it. It's just in the middle of the tree now. So yeah, good Good stuff there. Let's see.
And lastly, Manish writes, have you ever seen Wayward Pines? If so, what do you think of it?
This is the show that's currently airing on Fox. Have you guys seen Wayward Pines?
Yeah, we talked about it.
I watched 15 minutes of the pilot.
When did we talk about it, Maxwell?
On Twitter, like last week.
Twitter. Okay. I was going to say, it's like, were we in the show talking about this? Yeah, no, I'm enjoying it quite a bit.
Me too.
This is a cool mystery series. The first episode, first two episodes? First episode was directed by M. Night Shyamalan. I think he's certainly, I think he's like an executive producer on the show or whatever.
It's the best thing he's directed in years.
Yeah, it is. it's based off, and he has a movie coming out that we haven't talked about the trailer for yet, but I'm actually looking forward
to it. We will later.
I'm looking forward to that one. Maybe next week we'll talk about the trailer. But no, it has a great cast, and I'm a big Matt Dillon fan, so it has Matt Dillon, Melissa Leo, Terrence Howard, Juliette Lewis. It's this kind of
San Andreas star Carla Gugino.
Yes, San Andreas star Carla Gugino. It's just this mystery show that it feels like a lot of people can say Lost or whatever. I'm gonna say The Prisoner, that 60s show with McGoohan, of like, you know, giant bubbles. But regardless, it's like similar in terms of like people are stuck in a place and they can't get out of it, and there's weird stuff going on. And I'm really
Little Twin Peaks as well.
Well, yeah, because it's like the nature of the town and what have you and the characters. But I'm really compelled to keep watching this, and it's like it's based off a book, like three books maybe. It's like a book series.
I think it's a trilogy. Yeah, like I want to read them now.
But like, it's only like this first season. It's like 10 episodes, and I'm pretty sure it's supposed to be pretty self-contained, unless you know manages to get a second season. But I'm three episodes in. I'm really intrigued by what I've been seeing so far. So,
sweet. Oh, and Toby Jones too, isn't it?
Toby Jones, yes.
Toby Jones.
T. Jones. So yeah, I'm enjoying Wayward Pines quite a bit. So people should check that out on Fox if they want to, I guess. And Terrence Howard's crush get on Fox between this and Empire. So good for him.
Good for him.
Good man. That's feedback.
Man, I don't really know. Feedback.
Let's move on now. Let's get to what time is it, Abe?
Oh, Aaron, I think it might be time for some awesome games here. That was far from disastrous. That was beautiful.
That was far from the San Andreas crowd. Is like,
oh. I have a tear in my eye right now. And you can't see it.
Don't you give up on me.
All right. I've got a game for you guys this week.
Yeah? What is it?
It's called Rockin' It.
Rockin' It.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. I have a description of a movie with the word rock in its title.
Ooh.
And I would like for you to name the movie after I say the clue. Please buzz in with your name. And if you know it before I finish my clue, feel free to buzz in.
Rocking it.
All right.
Let's do it.
A Marine general takes matters into his own hands when he takes over Alcatraz to get reparations. Aaron.
The Rock.
That's correct.
I wasn't quick enough.
Next one. A group of street-level thugs, Russians, and rich businessmen all hunt for an elusive painting held by a drugged-out son of the boss. It has an all-star cast and directed by Guy Ritchie.
Oh, Maxwell.
Maxwell.
Rock and Rolla.
That's correct.
Oh.
Next one. Wes Anderson's first movie.
Aaron's.
Maxwell.
Bottle Rocket. The cleverness of
the clues. For that one, I was like, I don't know if they'd get any of the stuff that I'd write.
I think we would have, but...
All right, next one. A teen girl lands in Hollywood to pursue her dreams in an adapted Broadway play.
Maxwell.
Rock
of Ages.
That's correct. Next one. A boxer fights a Russian to end the Cold War.
Aaron. Rocky IV.
That's correct. All right. Next one. A substitute teacher allows his class
Jose. School of Rock.
That's correct.
Yeah. Right on that one.
I love that movie.
Boy.
Coming to Broadway in the fall.
Cool.
Is
Harley going to be in it?
No.
Okay.
Are they still working on a TV series? Because I am actually looking forward to that.
I don't know.
I haven't heard anything about the TV series in a long time.
Nice.
Sadness.
With a score by Andrew Lloyd Webber, which makes no sense, but
interesting. Yeah. The rocker.
It's going to be incredibly overly dramatic. Yeah. Next one. A young hero happens upon a jetpack and dons a mask to become a hero.
Aaron. The Rocketeer.
That's correct.
Such a good movie.
Good one.
Next one. Elvis Presley is mentored by music in it by his soulmate Maxwell.
Rock and Roll High School?
No.
Anyone
with the steel?
Keep say it again.
Elvis Presley is mentored in music by his cellmate to become a sensation.
Oh. Jose.
Jose.
Jailhouse Rock.
Oh, God, that's correct. Was my bad.
Last one. Yeah, last one. Boris, Natasha, and the Fearless Leader escape into Aaron.
The Adventures of Rocky and Bullwinkle.
That is correct.
Okay.
That was also produced by Robert De Niro. Because he loves Rocky and Bullwinkle.
Yeah, obviously. I imagine, I like to think that if you go to Robert De Niro's house, which I assume is somewhere in New York by the...
By Tribeca. Because Jay-Z sings about it.
Yeah, that he has like one room that's dedicated to Rocky and Bullwinkle paraphernalia. It's just all these like shirts and little toys.
This is my Rocky and Bullwinkle room.
He walks in there. He just does his Fearless Leader impression.
Scale-size statues.
Scale-size statues.
He still doesn't understand why he wasn't asked to be a voice in Mr. Peabody and Sherman.
Oh, man.
So that was the end of games. Jose and Maxwell, you guys are tied for second place. And Aaron, you are the winner.
Hey!
Hey-o!
Not bad. Not bad.
I want to continue off the Robert De Niro in his Rocky and Bullwinkle room. I like to think he calls Joe Pesci and Marty Scorsese over, and they just hang out.
They just hang out, yeah. They're just playing board games in there.
They have the official Rocky and Bullwinkle board game.
All right. Today, I'm going to be the moose.
Why you gotta be the moose? I can't do Joe Pesci.
That was all right.
No,
that was not bad.
All right. That was games. That was fun. Sad to see there's no mention of Rockadoodle, but we can't get
anything.
Rockadoodle.
So I was going to do that, but I was like, I don't know if they would remember this movie.
Hey,
but...
Don Bluth, is that right?
Don Bluth. Abe, clearly we Yes,
you don't know who you're dealing with here, Abe.
Yeah, I know. I should have known better. I should have better known better. Yeah. That's what John Travolta says in Pulp Fiction.
In 2 weeks, when you have games again, you better know better.
Better
should have known better. All right, now let's get to Out Now Presents What's Out Now. These are movies coming out on Blu-ray and DVD this week, and we have compared to last week, which was awful, we have a week that's full of good stuff and a couple other things, but some good stuff mainly. First up, we have... Okay, so I said that too enthusiastically leading up to this first one. First up, we have Jupiter Ascending, which I would encourage people to rent, just because I'm curious. I want more people to just see it. But
I've been waiting to rent it, actually.
But it's certainly, like, it's not a good movie, but it's similar to our Tomorrowland discussion. It's certainly ambitious, and I can admire that.
Yeah.
Next up, we have previously one of the biggest hits of the year, SpongeBob the Movie, Sponge Out of Water. Which is it's good. It's really, I'm a big SpongeBob fan. If you're a fan of SpongeBob or just, cartoon anarchy, go see SpongeBob the movie.
Cartoon anarchy.
It was previously the best Mad Max movie before Mad Max came out this year.
Great soundtrack as well.
It has a good soundtrack. Yeah. Next up we have Focus with the Suicide Squad's Will Smith and Margot Robbie.
I enjoyed that.
Yeah, I had fun.
Yeah, not bad.
Yeah.
Then we have McFarland USA with Kevin Borner. I mean, Costner.
I actually like that movie.
Yeah.
Let's see. We have Justified, the final season.
Ooh,
I'm a huge fan
season.
Of Justified.
I hear that it's a great show.
Yeah, it is a great show.
Good season.
Good final season, yeah, for sure. Now we have Apollo 13, the 20th anniversary edition.
Go see it. Go buy it. If they play it in theaters again, go see it in theaters.
The middle chapter of the Ed Harris space trilogy, as I call it.
Ah, yes, of course.
I'm a huge Apollo 13 fan. That and, like, The Right Stuff are just, the first chapter of the Ed Harris Space Trilogy. Those are just good movies. But Apollo 13, that's a movie when it came out. That was, like, a summer movie back in 94, 5, 95.
5, 95.
95. And I saw the movie, like, four times in theaters. I loved Apollo 13. I was all into it.
It's Terrific score.
I was 5. I did not watch
score,
it.
Ron Howard's best movie, I would say. Just a good
yes.
Movie. Next up, Abe, get excited. We have The Wire, the complete series on Blu-ray.
I've heard mixed things. I'm a big fan of The Wire, but I remember that David Simon was like, I intentionally shot it 4:3.
No, it's funny because we're about to get into this because I was excited to talk about this. So I'm reviewing it currently. I have the Blu-ray set. It's awesome, and I mean, in terms of like seeing the show again, I'm rewatching season 3 right now actually, which is What do you think, A? What, like season 3, 4, and 1, probably? Best seasons of The Wire?
I forget which one is the one with season... Wait, hold on. Let me...
Season 3 is
with Hamsterdam.
Oh, Hamsterdam. Hamsterdam, yeah.
Yeah, Hamsterdam, yeah.
With Cuddy and Carcetti and everybody. Like...
Right.
Yeah.
And it gets really thick, yeah. I'd say like 3, 4... Wait, did you say 3, 4, 1?
3, 4, 1.
Yeah, I'd say 3, 4, 1.
Are you saying in order?
No.
No, in terms of like
just the...
I think that's fair. I think 4 is the best season.
Yeah, yeah, 4 is like...
4 is incredibly like depressing. Yeah.
4 is the kids.
It is.
Yes. Yeah.
But 3, you got Omar really and Stringer Bell going back and forth.
They're back and forth. Yeah, they're starting to get some tectonic plate activity.
But like rewatching The Wire, it's like watching the show where like what if like characters from Boardwalk Empire, The Office, Game of Thrones, and The Walking Dead all got together and made a show together? Like that's watching The Wire right now, and it's great.
Yep, yep. With Heimdall.
With Heimdall, yes.
He can see with
Luther.
With Peter Baelish.
With Luther, yeah.
I'm saying, Game of Thrones, like, everybody's here. It's like everybody knows your name on the show.
The amazing wealth of talent on that show that has gone on to do some really remarkable things.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Now, with that said, Abe, it's neat. It's interesting watching it as widescreen now. And, I mean, it's obviously great because, you get to see HD versions of The Wire. So it's like, wow, the show looks great. And I can understand where David Simon, the creator of The Wire, was coming from when talking about how, he made it for TV and so it looks a certain way. But it's a really good looking show. Like it's hard to, it doesn't really take much away. I would say I'm really.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that it takes much away either. I haven't seen it, but I did see a clip of a scene 4x3 and then also a widescreen. It's like I don't really know if it takes away. It definitely does not take away from the storyline, but just from a visual aspect, I can see what David Simon is trying to do. But I don't think that if you're just watching it on a whim, you're not really gonna be like, damn it, I wish
it was full frame. That's not
right,
a thing that anyone says.
But, exactly.
But yeah, Wire's still great. Comes out full series on Blu-ray this week, which is exciting. There's also like a big bonus disc that has all kinds of new stuff on there. It's cool. Next up, 1776, The Director's Cut, starring Mr. Feeny.
Mr. Feeny's in it?
Yeah, so 1776, yes. I don't know if it's going to say classic, but that's an old movie. That's a pretty good.
Not know this movie.
The final season of Parks and Recreation.
Yes, let's get into that. Final season of Parks and Recreation comes out this week. Falling Skies Season 4, a show that I'm convinced I'm one of the 20 people that still watches it, even though it's been consistently good and has its final season this year. And lastly, Monsters Dark Continent.
You and the...
Monsters Dark Continent, which is a sequel to Gareth Edwards' Monsters that he was not involved with. I'm sure it's probably horrible, but I just wanted to point out the fact that that exists because I wanted to make a better point that Monsters is currently out on Netflix, I believe, and that's a movie that I like quite a bit from the director of Godzilla, so there you go. That's what's out now. They're coming out. Next up, we have Extremely Cool. These are films that are currently streaming on Netflix, and I have two here that both connect to this week's releases. First up, instead of seeing Aloha, maybe you can see Chasing Amy, Kevin Smith's other romantic comedy with Affleck and Jason Lee and Joey Lauren Adams.
It's a good movie.
That's a good movie. And it's currently streaming, so I just saw that randomly. I was like, that's a good movie. Just watch that, not Aloha. There you go. And also, speaking of disaster movies, friend of the show Jimmy O stars in Airplane versus Volcano, which is currently streaming on Netflix. And it's kind of entertaining, guys. So
if you do end up watching it on Netflix and you can take a screenshot, we'd love to have you post it onto our Facebook page.
I'd love to see screenshots of Jimmy O in Airplane versus Volcano on our Facebook.
Does he have a big role?
No.
No.
No, he doesn't.
He's in there for like 2 minutes.
But he defends Superman. And who is Dean Cain, of course. But he has a scene defending Dean Cain, which is, it's good stuff.
Yeah.
All right. Next week's show. Next week, there's a few things happening. First,
a few things.
The Entourage movie comes out. Oh, yeah.
on Wednesday, no less.
On Wednesday. I doubt we're going to do an episode on the Entourage movie, but we might do a double episode on Spy and Insidious Chapter 3.
And Insidious, exactly. Yeah, I got to finish up that trilogy.
That could be fun
stuff.
The
Ed Harris horror trilogy.
That could be fun stuff. And I will say that I've seen Spy already, and let's just say that my thoughts on Melissa McCarthy might have changed.
No.
Oh.
So,
She
was always great. What are you talking about?
We'll get there. But Spy and Insidious Chapter 3 come out next week, and that's probably what we're going to center our show around. Right, Abe? Does that sound good?
Yeah.
Okay.
Double feature.
Cool. Let's see. Next up, what should people go see now, and what do you plan to see next? These are movies that are... Let me start that again. Last up, we have, what should people go see now, and what do you plan to see next? So, Maxwell, what would you say people should go and see in theaters right now?
I mentioned it earlier, and it's a joke, but if you haven't seen it, I would recommend Far From the Madding Crowd.
Yeah, that's a good movie.
It's a really good period piece in the kind of Merchant Ivory style by Thomas Vinterberg, who did that movie I Know You Love, Aaron, with Mads Mikkelsen.
The Hunt? Yes.
Yes. What am I going to see next? Probably Mad Max again.
What would that be? Three or nice. Two or three?
Just two. I haven't seen it a second time yet.
Jose?
Yeah, if you somehow haven't seen Mad Max, go see Mad Max. Or if you've seen it, go see it again. Other than that, I gave my recommendation to San Andreas. If you can find a cheap, you know, showing of it, watch that. Next thing I'm probably going to see is Spy. I'm actually really looking forward to it. And I think other than that, I'm going to drive to San Francisco and watch The Babadook with Abe.
Nice. Woo! That's a good idea. I like that. Just force him down.
That's so nice of you.
I might just come down tonight to Stockton. Go check it out with you.
There you go. The two of you can have a good time. I can't wait for It Follows to come out, which I also talk about with my mom on the podcast, by the way.
Oh. Double feature with mom reviews?
Well, she hasn't seen it, but I had a good time talking to her about what it was, and she was very intrigued by it.
Cool.
But yeah, I just got the Art of Mad Max book, which is great awesome. Book. It's a great book. Book. Yes. And with that in mind, after seeing Mad Max a third time, after looking at this book, I just keep recommending people see Mad Max. Isn't it great that we can have this summer where Mad Max delivered completely, and we can be like, hey, just go keep seeing this. Like, it's just
great. Yeah. It's really nice.
Like, I've seen this movie three times now. It's fantastic. Like, it doesn't slow down or anything. It's just great. But so yeah, that. What I'm gonna see next? Entourage. Oh yeah, that's gonna be a thing.
Lloyd.
But yes. I'll just be doing Kevin Dillon all week. Hey, bro.
Turtle's my favorite.
I'm gonna see Entourage.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I will too.
Like, it's not going to be good, but it's going to be like, you know what? Why not, right?
I watched all eight.
Why not?
Feel like I owe it to see the movie.
Yeah, spoilers for the movie, though. Vinny and the gang are going to be all right.
Pretty sure they're going to make it out okay.
Yeah. Also, this week I'm going to see Dope, which I'm looking forward to quite a bit.
Yes, nice.
Nice. Let me know how that is. That looks awesome.
For sure, yeah, but I'm looking forward to Dope quite a bit. And I might even get to I am going to be interviewing the cast and director of Dope following
that
Sunday,
is
too.
So dope.
Yeah,
that
exactly.
is pretty dope.
I'm excited for that. Sure, I only get so many press day opportunities like that, so pretty cool for Dope. All right, so with all that said, that's going to do it for this week's episode of Out Now with Aaron and Abe. You can find more of my work at my personal blog, thecodeofzeke.com, where you can find all my written movie reviews, as well as at Rant Hollywood, where I write about movie news and what have you, lots of lists and stuff weekly. And, of course, you can find me on Twitter, at Aaron's PSHor, and I have my official Facebook page. I like saying that because I have a little blue check mark next to it. It's awesome. at Facebook.com/TheCodeIsZeke. Abe?
You can find more fun stuff at WalrusMoose.blogspot.com and Twitter.com/WalrusMoose. Hashtag Babadook with Jose.
Jose Cordova, where can people find more of your work online?
Find me at TheYoungFolks.com. I'm going to be doing maybe some more video game stuff hopefully soon. And other than that, follow me on Twitter at Jose Cordova. That's just my name.
Maxwell.
Yeah, follow me on Twitter at Cinemaxwell. Check out Cinemaxwell.com and check out my podcast, Real Topics. The next episode, which is coming out within the next week, will be about Disney animated movies.
Great. Mm. Looking forward to that. I've been enjoying
nice.
Your podcast Thank you. Quite a bit.
Thank you very much.
And you can find all the other episodes of Out Now with Aaron and Abe on iTunes, Audio Boom, and at Stitcher.
Sorry. You can also find our other episodes over at SoundCloud, Podomatic, and HHWLOD.
You can email us your thoughts on San Andreas or other things that you might have seen recently at outnowpodcast@gmail.com.
Interact with us over at facebook.com/outnowpodcast or tweet at us at twitter.com/outnow_podcast.
And lastly, you can follow our Tumblr page, outnowpodcast.tumblr.com. Maxwell, Jose, thank you both for joining us today.
Always good a times.
Did it.
Did it, guys. Did it. Quick question before we really wrap up. Where would you put this in the Rock's pantheon of movies?
Oh.
Towards the top of the lower half.
Okay.
I only know that because I just this week worked on a Letterboxd list and I slid it in where I felt. So it's like towards the top of the lower half.
Nice. Nice. Still not getting that rundown sequel.
Okay. I would love that.
I'd put it higher than Scorpion King.
Nope.
But lower than, lower than something a lot of, I don't know.
Yeah, somewhere near Scorpion King and Walking Tall.
I like Scorpion King. I do not like Walking Tall.
I've only saw Scorpion King once, so I have I can't really say how well it stacks up, but I would say I liked him in it more than I liked him in this movie. But yeah, I mean, Rundown stands tall and walks tall even, and I'd like to hope that maybe, just maybe, the Rock can like use this cachet of the San Andreas opening to parlay into a new Rundown movie. But
even if not, just an action movie that has like a sense of humor and is fun.
Yeah.
Because if you look at like some of his standalones, like Snitch or Faster, they're like pretty dour, and he's so funny.
It is. Yeah, that's fun, bro.
Even if they do a Hobbs movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's going to be pretty sad.
He and Calvin could be great.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's going to do it for this week's episode. Until next time, so long.
And goodbye.